Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. If you have just joined us, you are tuned to Radio Islam International. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. Welcome to the program, Family Health Matters. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, first up, as usual, is health news. And today, alhamdulillah, we'll be talking to Lynn Zinema and also another guest, Brian Eads. Well, if you are not aware of it right now, today is World Multiple Sclerosis Awareness Day. These people are actually be crossing to them live on the red buses or the sightseeing buses. It's an event taking place today. They're celebrating World Multiple Sclerosis Awareness Day. So I'll be speaking to Lynn in a little while and also hopefully to another patient on the bus. His name is Brian Eads. He has multiple sclerosis. So I'll be speaking to them in a little while. That will be followed by fasting and its benefits. And today I'm going to be actually speaking to somebody very interesting, Dr. Fareed Ahmed Saleh, who is medical practitioner from Barberton and who also has expertise in orthomolecular medicine. So yes, we'll be talking about that to him in a little while too. So first up is health news, and I hope we have Lynn with us on the line. Hi, Lynn, are you online? Not yet. Okay, we're hoping to get her a little bit. We're trying to get hold of her. She's on the bus. It's those red buses, the sightseeing buses in Johannesburg. And I think the same thing is happening in Cape Town as well. So we hope to speak to her a little bit in a few moments. It's World Multiple Sclerosis Day today. That's the 25th of May. And yes, so we want to talk to them, just find out a little about what is happening out there. Okay, so we have online. Okay, thank you so much. Hi, good afternoon, Lynn. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, so tell me, are you still on the bus?
We just hopped off the bus and we're at the new Newtown Mall.
Mm-hmm.
We've been handing out pamphlets and leaflets, and we've been showing that people with multiple sclerosis with ME can live productive lives and live their lives. They don't have to be held back.
Okay. So tell me, what time did you board the buses?
Well, we got up very early this morning to actually get to the buses, and by the time we got to the bus, it was about 9:45.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been at it for most of the day.
Okay, so tell me, what was the route? Where did what was the route like? Where did you go through? Was it just Johannesburg?
Well, we're on the Johannesburg City bus,
mm-hmm.
and we started off in at Park Town, at the Park Station on the red bus.
Yeah.
And we've stopped off at the Apartheid Museum, we stopped off at Goldridge City, at various stops, and we at Carlton Center, and we've got off now. This is our second stop that we've got off. And we're just enjoying a lovely lunch now and chatting to people at the mall.
Okay, tell me, on the bus, who did you have on the bus?
Well, we've got the Multiple Sclerosis Society of Johannesburg here, the Inland Society, and the Inland Branch. And I've got two people here that I've lined up for you to chat to,
mm-hmm.
who do suffer from multiple sclerosis, who have varying degrees of the disease, and that know a lot about it. They can talk and tell you all about what this day is all about and what multiple sclerosis is all about.
Okay, that would be wonderful. But just before we go on to them, please tell me, while you were on the bus, what was the mood of the people on the bus and along the route as well?
Well, you know what, the reason why we went on the bus trip was to create awareness for ME.
Mm-hmm.
So the mood amongst the MS, the people with MS was very upbeat, very exciting. They're enthused and passionate about their cause. And I think that sort of relates to other people along the route. So the other people on the bus were just normal visitors and tourists that were then interacting with the people, with the MS society and the patient.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately the whole objective is to raise awareness for MS on this day, and to showcase that MS does not have to hold you back,
mm-hmm.
and that even if there are various degrees of maybe disability, that you can work within that and you can be productive and you can live a life going forward.
Okay. Now, a similar event is taking place in Cape Town as well. Is this happening more or less at the same time?
it's happening in Cape Town and worldwide as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And in South Africa, we are lucky to have one of the companies, Merck, that's very involved in raising awareness for multiple sclerosis, to have helped us put this event together. And yeah, so exactly, or similar to what's happening in Joburg, is happening in Cape Town and other countries as well. It is a global event.
Okay, so that must be a really wonderful time you are having right now on those buses. But at least, like you said, you are off the bus right now. Are you going to continue from here? Are you back already, or
no,
are you
going to continue from here? So we're going to hop back on the bus probably in the next half an hour, and we will be continuing to other points as well.
Okay, that's wonderful. Well, we do wish you all the best. And you said you have two people lined up for me. We have Brian Eads, I believe, and who else?
We have Irene.
Irene. Okay, fine. Who would you like to put on first?
I'm going to put Irene on the line for you, and after that you can chat to Brian.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Irene.
Okay. Hi, Irene.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Irene. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio Islam International.
Oh, thank you so much. Talking to us.
Okay, it's wonderful. First, tell me, how are you feeling right now?
You know, I'm feeling fine.
Mm-hmm.
because I have done the things I need to do to look after myself every day. 8 hours sleep is not enough for me. I need to sleep 9 hours. I need to have 3 good meals a day. But when I walk, I have limited mobility.
Okay.
I have what some people would call is a limp, but I don't like to think of it like that.
Okay.
It's just something that interferes with the speed of my mobility. But I can drive, I am very active, and I'm very functional, and I'm very happily married.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Now tell me, Irene, when were you diagnosed with multiple sclerosis?
Well, it's interesting because I was only diagnosed in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
But that was 10 years after my first incident, because my type of MS is called relapsing remitting.
Mm-hmm.
That means something goes wrong and then later on it could get fixed. So what happened, I was at school in 1977 and I was just messing around at break like ordinary schoolgirls, and suddenly I felt odd and I realized I had gone blind in one eye.
Oh.
I couldn't see a thing just out of one eye. And in those days, they didn't have the MRI scans, which are sort of standard practice now, the magnetic resonance imaging x-rays. So they couldn't look into my brain to examine. But I was blind for a bit. And the doctor sent me to a specialist, and he injected cortisone into my eyelid. And then my vision came back. And since then I've been able to see very well. But now my limp started about 8 years ago, but it hasn't come back.
Okay.
I can't walk as I used to walk when I was a schoolgirl. So it interferes, you know, there's a bit of paralysis, a bit of vision, visionary stresses, and also there's chronic fatigue. So when I had MS when I was a teenager, you know, I thought, gee, I must be such a nerd, because all the 16-year-old girls that were friends with me, they would have all this big energy and they'd say, let's go out and let's go shopping and let's go do this. And I thought they were crazy.
Mm.
So I thought, oh, well, I'm just a nerd. But only after I was diagnosed did I realize that there is a symptom called chronic fatigue.
Okay.
So I just have to watch my energy level.
Okay. And, you know, how do you find, you know, how do you manage your condition now? I'm sorry, I hope you don't mind, but would you like to tell us how old you are?
I don't mind at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 53.
Yes.
And I was when I was 16, I went blind in one eye.
Mm.
And that is 47 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would have various incidents. I guess it was the blindness, then it came back, then my arm was paralyzed, then I had sleeping pain in my earlobe where I just couldn't function properly. But after cortisone, I was fine.
Okay.
But I am one of the lucky MS people because I still can function.
Okay.
But one of my special friends was a young woman called Khadija. And Khadija, she got sick when she was 12 and she passed away at 17. And her mom is the president of the MS Society at the moment.
Okay.
And she just had primary progressive MS. So something went wrong, then it didn't get better, then something else went wrong, then something else, and eventually her system just collapsed.
Okay.
And she passed away. So
yeah.
Those are just two of the different types of MS.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Irene. We certainly do appreciate you coming on air and sharing that with us. Thank you so much. Do you think I could speak to Brian now?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No,
okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Have a good day.
You
bye.
Too.
Bye.
Okay. Hello?
Hello there.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for joining us as well.
Yes, pleasure.
Okay, tell us, when were you diagnosed with multiple sclerosis?
I was diagnosed in 2000,
mm-hmm.
The year 2000, that's the Y2K year, for those who remember all the computers were going to break.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't, my legs did.
Okay, how has it actually affected your life thus far?
Well, it affected my life in terms of, first of all, I found it very difficult to walk. I can walk properly now. I'm fully mobile. In those days, I was very involved in the corporate world.
Mm.
I used to travel back and forward to Japan a couple of times a year for corporate business. And I was also, when I was here, I was involved in meetings and traveling around the country virtually every day. So it affected me in terms of I used to get extremely tired, extremely fatigued.
Mm.
And you start losing patience with people. You start... you just start really just getting aggressive with people. Not, I'm a sort of mild-mannered person, and when you start losing your cool, then it's not very good. So, from a business perspective, the difficulty in walking, the difficulty concentrating for long periods in meetings. So I was then boarded nearly eight years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, now I'm not really a house husband. I do the cooking and the shopping. I don't do the washing and ironing. And I'm a volunteer with the MS Society.
Okay. You know, just for the benefit of our listeners, I know we've been speaking about multiple sclerosis all the time, but perhaps could you just briefly explain to us what multiple sclerosis is all about?
Okay, sure. It's a disease that affects central nervous system. So how it works is basically your immune system attacks the cover. There's a insulation over your brain and over your brain stem, the back of your neck, your brain stem. And it attacks those nerves. It attacks the cover over those nerves. And it stops the message from getting through from your brain through to wherever, perhaps your limbs, perhaps your eyesight. So that basically the message going to various parts of your body gets confused or stopped completely. So in some instances, people have to are completely debilitated and have to travel in wheelchairs. And other people are more fortunate, like myself, you know. So it is debilitating, and yeah, it is very serious effects on many people.
Okay. Can it be cured in any way?
Sorry?
Can it be cured in any way?
No, there's no cure. There's no cure at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also no known reason why it happens. What has been found is it's more prevalent in... The more you get away from the equator,
mm-hmm.
the more prevalent it is.
Okay.
So Scandinavian countries, it is most prevalent. And also amongst ladies, double the number of ladies as men.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, but there's no known cause for the disease and no cure.
Okay, what about the treatment and management? You know, what's that all about?
Okay, treatment is quite very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a good medical aid, take an injection weekly or some people daily. It depends on which brand you go for. And it's called a beta interferon. And what that does is basically extend the period between attacks. So instead of maybe having an attack every once a year, you can extend it to once every third year. And that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you do get an attack or a relapse, you then have to go into hospital. Originally, I didn't used to go into hospital. I did it as just in and out of the hospital in the mornings, go straight to work. But you go in, nowadays I go in for 5 days, and you go on a cortisone drip, which is an extremely strong version type of cortisone.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically stops the inflammation from going the third. So it's a twofold. You know, the delaying and then the trying to stop it going any further, but it doesn't actually cure it; it just delays it.
Okay, and then just one very important question is: what are some of the just quickly main challenges that people with multiple sclerosis very often face?
Well, I think one of the main challenges that everybody seems to suffer with is fatigue.
Mm.
So you don't. We don't need the normal 8-hour sleep. 10, 12 hours is quite normal, or 10 hours probably. But after you've gone in for treatment, then, or after you've had an attack, it can go up to 12, 14 hours of sleep you need, which is quite difficult. The other main things are mental capacity in terms of cognitive abilities,
mm-hmm.
ability to make decisions, is quite serious, although it's not visible. And then the visible signs, I suppose, are more the limbs not working properly. So, for example, I can walk perfectly, but I don't walk straight. So people in the morning probably think I've been on the bottle all night, but I haven't. I just don't. I'm not able to walk in a sort of straight line.
Okay.
Your arms also, your limbs. You know, when I first found that I had it, my arm used to fall off my computer screen, my laptop just fall off my desk, because I didn't, not that it hurts or anything, it just sort of, just don't have the strength to hold it up. So that's probably the two most important, most noticeable. Now, many people end up in wheelchairs, particularly because of the limbs, the legs, giving up on them.
Okay, finally, what message do you have for our listeners out here?
Yeah, my message is just that people should keep their heads up. My personal motto is keep on walking, and it's just keep positive. The world slogan for today is World MS Day today.
Mm-hmm.
Is together we can beat multiple sclerosis. So multiple sclerosis can be beaten, and people should just keep their heads up as much as they can. I know sometimes it's very hard, but just to keep positive.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking to us, Brian. We certainly do appreciate it, and we do wish you all the best, and we hope that, you know, life will be much easier for you. But thank you so much for joining us, and do enjoy the rest of this event today.
Okay, great pleasure. Thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for talking to us. Well, listeners, today is World Multiple Sclerosis Day, and here's we had Lynn from Oz Health Communications, who is the coordinator of this event, talking to us, and we also had Brian and Iris, who are both people that have this condition, multiple sclerosis. And basically what they are wanting us to do is to, you know, just understand the disease, and hopefully after the month of Ramadan we will have a full program all about multiple sclerosis. But for today, we do wish them all the best. That's it. We're going to take a break. When we return, inshallah, we're going to be talking about fasting and its benefits. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Family Health Matters. The month of Ramadan is a period of fasting, sacrifice, giving, piousness, and self-training, with the hope that these qualities will extend beyond this month and stay with us throughout the year. Indeed, the essence of fasting in Ramadan is spiritual. Nevertheless, this holy month also offers a number of benefits for both the mind and the body. And yes, Ramadan is just a few, a week and a half, almost 2 weeks away. And joining me online from Barberton is Dr. Fareed Ahmed Saleh, who's also an expert in orthomolecular medicine. He's also a medical practitioner, alhamdulillah. And today we'll be discussing fasting, its benefits, what to eat, what to avoid, so inshallah we can then get maximum benefits this Ramadan and of course all the other Ramadans to come. Assalamu alaikum, jazakallah khair for joining us, Dr. Fareed Saleh. Thank you so much. It's wonderful to have you with us online.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, Afa Zinat, and assalamu alaikum to all our listeners wherever they may be.
Alhamdulillah, alaikum salam. Now, you said you're an orthomolecular practitioner. I think that's very interesting. It sounds very interesting, and I think first you need to explain to us what that is.
Well, it is a very interesting subject. What it means, ortho means right, and molecule means when atoms join together, they form molecules, and the molecules that exist in the human body. So these are the right molecules. So if there's any molecule that is not bio-identical, mm-hmm. that means it is not exactly the same as the molecules in the body, then it's going to cause trouble. Do you see? Mm-hmm. So therefore, orthomolecular medicine, its basic aim is to replace right molecules with wrong molecules. And it is the molecules that the wrong molecules that cause trouble in our body.
Okay, so now we're going to talk to you about fasting. Of course, I hope I got that, you know, we quite understand that. Inshallah, we will as we go along. Anyway, let's talk about fasting and its benefits. And, you know, we're just a few, basically about 14 days away from the fasting month, alhamdulillah. And I think so many of us are actually looking forward to it, alhamdulillah. So, but tell us, what does fasting actually do to the body?
Well, you know, Abba Zinat, mm-hmm. that fasting, Allah Ta'ala, out of His kindness, mercy and generosity, He showed us how to do fasting, and He attached great importance to it. He attached so much importance to it that He made it one of the five pillars of our deen. He attached so much importance to it that Allah Ta'ala Himself gives the reward for it. It is so important that the fishes in the sea make dua for you while you are fasting. How is it that the fishes know that we are fasting? Why is it that they are making dua for us? Because the actions of the children of Adam determines the conditions that exist, you understand? Mm-hmm. Now, we will confine ourselves to talking about what happens to the body. When you're in a fasting state, the body undergoes many changes, and these changes are all beneficial. remember, you've got a, you've used your body for the whole year, and now is a time for cleansing. Remember, I am talking only of the body itself, not the ruh, not the heart, not all the other benefits. You understand? Mm-hmm. Because those benefits are immeasurable. These are benefits we will enjoy in this world. The other benefits are, we will enjoy its benefits in this world and in the hereafter. You see? So, to maintain this body, which Allah Ta'ala gave us, in which the ruh is placed, and the body is the thing that the ruh experiences the world with the senses. Mm. So, what happens to your body when you are fasting? There are a lot of wonderful, wonderful things that happen. I'm not giving it in any particular order. I'm just giving it at random now. Okay?
Yeah.
So, one of the things that happens is, when you are fasting, your insulin level starts going down. And when your insulin level starts going down, then inflammation in your body starts going down. When your insulin level starts going down, then also a very important thing happens. If you imagine a warehouse, you understand? That means your fat cell is a warehouse. So it's got an entrance and it's got an exit. The entrance, the fat enters and it exits when it is required. However, when your insulin level is up, the fat cannot leave the fat cell because there is a certain enzyme there. It's called hormone-sensitive lipoprotein lipase. To those who are technically minded, want to write it down and read more about it, you see. So this enzyme keeps the fat cell full because the fat cannot come out. But in Ramadan, or whenever you lower the insulin levels, how does it get lowered? Because you stop eating. So now the sugar that is in the blood is now metabolized, it's burnt for fuel. It takes approximately 12 to 14 hours for the sugar and the glycogen stores to become low enough for that gate to open, and now you start burning fat. Now, this benefit is that your body can metabolize sugar and it can metabolize fat. However, with our modern obsession with eating three times a day, breakfast, lunch and supper, and then we have snacks in between, it is good for re-establishing balance in the body. However, when we eat like that, then we don't give the intestines a rest. We don't give the stomach a rest. And remember, in your intestine, 80% of your immune system is residing there. So it's working all the time to see what's coming. They're talking to each other, they're busy. So, but when you stop eating, then the immune system in the intestine gets a rest. And when that happens, then our listeners will notice that when Ramadan comes, certain symptoms that they had throughout the year, they subside and they start feeling better. Why is that? It is because the immune system starts going down. And very, very surprisingly, you would think that if you are fasting, you'll feel hungrier and hungrier and hungrier. But it doesn't happen like that. Why? Because of Allah Ta'ala's arrangement that when you stop eating, there is an enzyme in the stomach, it's called, as a hormone, it's called ghrelin, G-H-R-E-I-L-I-N. When your ghrelin level goes up, you are satisfied. That means it stimulates this, what is called the satiety center, which tells you, don't eat anymore, you are full, we don't need any more food. That's what the brain tells the body. But however, you are fasting. So it means that as you fast and as the days go by, this hormone goes up and your appetite then goes down. So you can't eat that much in Ramadan. Did you notice that?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Hmm. So why is this? Because Allah Ta'ala made this arrangement for us. So how grateful must we be to Him that, He arranged these things for our convenience, for our benefit, and for cleansing the body. There are other things that happen also. You know, the brain is being used all the time, and it's actually burning sugar. It burns sugar. It burns the most sugar in the body because it is so active, you understand? However, in Ramadan, strange thing happens. That as your insulin level drops, your sugar levels also start dropping. When your glycogen, which is the form in which the glucose is stored in the body, when the storage is also gone, now your liver starts taking fat and making something called ketone bodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
These ketone, when you smell the breath of a fasting person, do you remember the characteristic smell?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is ketones now. So the brain starts using ketones, and it's a clean burning fuel. What does it mean? It's a clean burning fuel, means it doesn't have an exhaust, or not as much as glucose has. It is at this precise time that a wonderful thing happens. The brain starts releasing a molecule called BDNF. So all those who are technically minded, you can go and read up on capital BDNF. What does that mean? That's brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And what does this do? This, its nickname is fertilizer for the brain. What does that mean? It means that it enhances the brain. It enhances the ability for the brain to heal. It goes into the cell and it triggers off inside the cell cleansing. So, you know, in certain diseases you get broken proteins accumulating inside the brain. Now when that happens, we call it Alzheimer's disease, you understand? When certain other areas of the brain, they have a problem making their neurotransmitters like dopamine, we call that Parkinson's disease. So all of these are rejuvenated. They start growing. It's like throwing fertilizer on your grass or your plants or your vegetables. This molecule is released during fasting. Do you see that?
Gee.
Isn't that an amazing thing?
Absolutely amazing.
You will notice that during Ramadan, your memory increases. It gets better. You know, you feel better. You can remember better. Why? Because this cloud of sugar is now gone. Now you are burning fat. So, if we see all of these things happening, what other things happen? You know the exhaust, when you burn sugar in your mitochondria inside your cells, it gives off an exhaust. This exhaust is immediately neutralized by what is called an antioxidant system inside the body. It relies on vitamin C and vitamin E. Now, during Ramadan, this antioxidant production goes down. And at the root of most illnesses that have been studied, Abazinat, you find that there is inflammation and there is oxidation. And both of these, while you are fasting, start going down. So this is one of the reasons why you feel so much better. However, there are many other things that happen. But I would like to say to our listeners that during this month of Ramadan, which Allah Ta'ala gave us out of His kindness and generosity, to make maximum benefit of the body healing, we must not give the body any toxic molecules. That means awful molecules is the right molecules that the body requires. Toxic molecules are molecules that the body does not recognize. It is not part of the biochemistry of the body. It has never existed in the body. The body has never encountered it. So when you start taking these toxic molecules, you can call that now toxi-molecular. Isn't that a nice word?
Mm-hmm. Toxi-molecular.
Okay? Toxi-molecular.
I'm learning now real big words today.
Yeah. Now, all it means is that the body does not recognize, it's not bio-identical. So in medicine, they teach us, first thing they teach us, they say, do no harm. So, if you are fasting, do not wipe out all these benefits that Allah Ta'ala has given us by eating molecules that are harmful. Which molecules are harmful and that you must exclude and eliminate from your diet? The first thing to exclude and eliminate from your diet is toxic cooking oil.
Okay, I think this is where we start taking notes.
Yeah, I think you start. Yeah, our listeners also, pen and paper ready? Avoid these, because these are toxic molecules, okay? Now, cooking oil, it undergoes processes. Look, I can only give you a sort of an introduction and a taste, because our time is short, so I will just try to summarize so that you can get a bird's eye view of what it is that we are discussing, okay? So, oil, I would advise you to stop the oil completely. Use only the following four oils.
Okay, which ones are those?
The world's best cooking oil is coconut oil, unrefined, ne? Coconut oil.
Unrefined.
Yeah, unrefined. Because when you refine it, you damage it. Apa Zinat, I want to ask you a question, and all our listeners also, that this coconut oil, Allah Ta'ala put it only in one other place besides coconut and palm oil. Only one other place He put it. And more than 50% of the fat and oil that is in that is coconut oil. Where do you think it might be? I'll give you the answer. It is in mother's milk.
Oh.
So if Allah Ta'ala put coconut oil in mother's milk, can we take a hint from that as to how important it is and how valuable it is? It will stimulate your thyroid gland. It will, it's got myriad benefits. It's an antibiotic, it's an antiviral. It's got something in there called lauric acid. So you start consuming, especially in Ramadan, start consuming, you use it for cooking and you start eating it. So every time I would take a tablespoon or two of coconut oil, add it to my food, or just eat it like that and enjoy it. It's delicious. Iftar time, especially our huffaz who are going to be reading Taraweeh, and for us also, instead of standing there half bent and tired and falling over, take coconut oil. You when the 20 rakats are finished, you'll say, I wish there were 20 more. You see, you'll have so much energy. Try it and you'll see.
Okay.
So, cooking oil. coconut oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Second, desi ghee. Desi ghee. Why do I specify desi ghee and not just ghee?
Mm-hmm.
Because desi ghee comes from unpasteurized milk that comes from cows that only eat grass, and they are not given 54 different antibiotics. They are not given recombinant bovine growth hormone. They are not given estrogen to make them grow so that their udders are up to the ground and full of pus. That is not right ghee. The real ghee, desi ghee you specify, means it must come from cows, unpasteurized milk, that are eating only grass. Natural, natural. That ghee is so wonderful and valuable that it is actually a medicine. It's got something in it that is very hard to find. It's called butyric acid. Your intestinal lining uses butyric acid to heal itself and to metabolize. Our hakims knew about this long time ago. They use it as a medicine. But if you get ghee that's made from pasteurized milk, that comes from cows that are fed corn and they are fed all kinds of funny things and are given these injections, I would say stay away from that, because that is toxic molecular. You see?
Okay.
Then olive oil, remember 80% of the olive oil in this country is adulterated.
Mm-hmm.
You must reuse pure olive oil. And lastly, to remember all the olden days, we used to use animal fat. We must start using it again. It's very, very valuable. You know, the fat that comes from the back, around the kidneys, around. This is now from organic animals, organic goats, organic sheep, organic. That means they were not given toxic things, because they will be represented in the fat if you give toxins. So you take that, you put it in a pot, and you heat it up gently, it'll become an oil. Then you get a little bit of onions on top, take that out and eat it. Put some vagar there and, you know, some tomatoes, some chilies, and eat it. We used to do that in the olden days on the farm, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And the oil that comes from there, you add a tablespoon or two of water, and you let it boil gently. Then you pour it out into containers. Use that for cooking. Wonderful. Okay.
The animal fat.
Yes.
Well, I was always under the impression that, you know, you need to remove all the fat.
This is a disinformation that has been put into our brain to our own detriment. Always ask yourself, if somebody's telling you something, who benefits from it? Mm-hmm. Do you benefit or does somebody else benefit? From Adam alayhi salam's time, saturated fat was wonderful. How come only now saturated fat is causing a trouble? You see that?
Yeah.
So that is disinformation. Now, there was a paper published, I think, on Friday, last week Friday, saying that we were wrong about this saturated fat advice all along. They are admitting it. So therefore, in all cases, buyer beware. That means you must have the correct information for yourself and your family. Okay?
Okay.
Time is moving, right?
Yes.
So that is now the oil.
The oil is cheap.
So
okay.
Forget about all the oils. Forget about margarine and canola and all of these things. Leave it out. These are, they contain toxic molecules. Where do you find the toxic molecules contained in those oils? You know, I think it was 1999, some researchers got the bright idea. They said, what is that thing that's causing the blockage in the arteries in the heart? They called it the atheroma, you understand? What is it actually made up of? You understand? Because then the tools became available to investigate it. So they took that and they analyzed it. And what do you think they found? Did they find saturated fat? Hardly. Did they find cholesterol? Hardly. This is not me speaking. This is the study that showed. Hardly. But the majority of the fat that was in there was damaged omega 6s. And where does that come from? From the cooking oil. And the margarine. And any food or any baking or anything that uses that toxic oil. You see?
Okay.
So, oil, our listeners out there, listen carefully. If you change your cooking oil, you have done a great thing for you and your family. And once you start using that, you will see. The body say, now we have to give the body the correct fats so that it can start incorporating it into the body. That means the damaged brick is taken out, the good brick is put in. So you see your health will improve. This is the month Allah Ta'ala gave us, so let's make maximum benefit. Change your cooking oil. Choose one of those. If I was you, I'll choose coconut oil. Or you can use coconut oil and olive oil. Mix the two together. This is for cooking. And don't be shy. You can use it. It's not a problem. Don't put a piddling amount because the flavor is in the fat.
Okay.
The fat is the medium used to transfer heat to the food so that it can become cooked, okay? So, that's very, very briefly. I didn't dig deep into the topic at all. It's more like giving instructions, you know?
Okay.
You say, okay, change your cooking oil. But if you dig deep and go into it, why is this and what, then an understanding will come. And then a question will arise in our minds that how is it that we have been fooled for 100 years? Do you see that?
Yes.
Because this lie started 100 years ago. Then, if I was our listeners, alhamdulillah, with the help of my family and my wife and everybody who, we have been doing this for about 8 years now, right? And completely different our health. I used to weigh 89 kilograms, I'm 63 now.
Alhamdulillah.
I used to be a diabetic, I'm not a diabetic anymore, alhamdulillah. Now, another thing that is contributing greatly to our illnesses is flour. That means anything made from the following, listeners: barley, wheat, rye, oats. There's also one called spelt and triticale, but it doesn't occur too much in our diet, you understand?
Okay.
How much of this must you eat? The answer is zero.
Really?
Nothing, not even 1 gram. Why? Because at this moment, on this Wednesday, right? I'm just saying, it's up to date now. More than 144 illnesses are directly related to this flour. Now, it isn't time to go into why. Perhaps we can spend a whole program just discussing. Why the flour is so dangerous. But I'm not saying take my word for it. I'm saying you must go and investigate it yourself and go and see.
Mm-hmm.
So you cleave. What does it mean flour? It means, in practical terms, it means bread, biscuits, cakes, pasta, pizza, gulab jambu, samosas, and the list is goes on. And I understand at this moment in time that our freezers and fridges are full of these things. And the biscuits and all that kind of thing. You understand?
Mm-hmm. But what do we do with that?
Now, I'm just a warner.
Mm-hmm.
You must decide what to do. If you want to continue harming yourself, what I advise you to do is this Ramadan, give up all of these things and see how you feel on Eid day. Right? Compare it to all the other Eid days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how you feel and how Ramadan will go. So do it now so that you can see and then you can decide, okay? So all the things associated with flour made from barley, wheat, rye and oats. Why? Because this is not the barley and wheat and rye that we used to have. These are all different. Now, the third thing I want to discuss is milk, yogurt, cheese, buttercream. How much time do we have, Appa?
Actually, I think we'll have to go into that the next program because we've just about running out. There's only about a minute or two left.
Minute, I'll tell you, stop these. Flour,
okay.
Milk,
mm-hmm.
That means yogurt, cheese, buttercream. Sugar, anything to do with sugar, golden juice, sweet chocolate, and also artificial sweeteners.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Never microwave your food. You will change the molecules inside there. You will destroy them. Anything that contains chemicals, you stop it. Especially, you know, the shampoos, the toothpaste with the fluoride and all those kind of things. Anything you put on your body, under your arm, if you cannot eat it, do not put it on your skin because it will get absorbed. If you want to put something on your skin, put coconut oil.
Oh.
Processed foods, especially processed meats, all processed foods, eliminate them. Okay? All we need to do in Ramadan is to eat 50 essential nutrients that the body requires. Inshallah, when we meet the next time, I will tell you the things in which these 50 nutrients are found and how to take it. Okay?
Inshallah. Well, I must say, Jazakallah khair. It was, very, very interesting listening to you. And we hope, inshallah, we will start thinking about it. And hopefully by the month, when Ramadan starts, inshallah, we will, follow the right way.
Inshallah wa ta'ala. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. I will advise our listeners,
mm-hmm.
spend until Sunday crying because you're going to be losing a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next week you prepare. Prepare all the new things. And it's so simple. Keep it simple. And you will have a completely different Ramadan. Inshallah, may Allah Ta'ala accept everybody's efforts. Forgive the ummah. And give hidayah, tawfiq and hidayah to the entire ummah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Apa Zinat?
Wa alaikum salam. Jazakallahu khair for a very interesting program. Dr. Fareed Ahmed Saleh, we hope to speak to you next week, inshallah. And I was hoping to have you the whole of Ramadan, but unfortunately I won't be having you, but we will. Well, that's it then from us. Until next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.